Sometimes when I meet someone for the first time, they'll wonder what my ethnic background is. You know, they'll say, are you a native Arizonan, or were you born somewhere else, or are you Hispanic? And I have to tell them I'm actually Asian. I was born in Malaysia. And they'll say, what was it like growing up in an Asian household? And I'll say, well, you know that movie Crazy Rich Asians? That's like basically my family, except for the rich part. So the movie I just recently watched is about this woman, Rachel Chu, right? An American-born Chinese woman who travels to Singapore to her boyfriend Nick's best friend's wedding. And little does Rachel know, but Nick comes from a filthy rich family. And the movie follows the dynamics of this young lady as she gets to know her boyfriend's family. But there's one scene that sums up the main problem. One of Nick's cousins, Eddie, questions Rachel about her family name. And so he presses her and says, so where does your family Chu come from? What do they do? Do they own a bank? Do they own restaurants? What's your family's monetary worth? When he finds out that she's basically a commoner, he tells his cousin Nick, well, why are you dating her? And I hope you're not planning on marrying her, because what would she be bringing to the family? What sort of prestige? What sort of honor? Appearance, opulence, power, prestige, money, fame are his ideas of greatness. And the families in the movie allow such things to consume them, such that everything that St. James warns about in the second reading today about jealousy, selfish ambition, every foul practice and disorder erupts and threatens even to stifle out the possibility of true and selfless love. In today's gospel, the disciples had been discussing among themselves on the way who was the greatest. Fame, money, positions of power and authority, I'm sure were all part of their conversation. And I think too many of us, like the apostles, see these traits as hallmarks of what it means to be great in this world. Jesus, knowing everything that's about to happen, wanted to give his disciples a context for their discussion on greatness. So he tells them before they set out, the Son of Man is to be handed over to men and they will kill him. And 3 days after his death, the Son of Man will rise. Jesus reveals his upcoming passion, his embracing of his cross, and eventual death and resurrection. But how did the disciples react? It says they did not understand and they were afraid. They are confused because this is in direct contradiction to their conception of greatness. Because what's so great about dying on the cross? What is so great about appearing weak, helpless, and even in the face of your enemies who are doing this and you have the power to do something about it, you remain there and you say, Father, forgive them. Where is the prestige? Where is the fame? Where is the riches that is meant for a true king? There's none of that on the throne of the cross. And so the disciples are confused. But basically, what Jesus is saying is, I am the one, the Son of Man, who is great. But you, my disciples, do not know yet what it means to be great, because you think it means that everyone will know your name, that you will have riches, power, prestige, the admiration of men. That's not what it means, because to be great means giving yourself away to benefit the ones that you love, and even the ones who have difficulty loving you. And that means sometimes sacrificing everything, even if it's your life. Greatness will take shape in a soul that serves the least, the forgotten, the poor. And for anyone who is great or desiring to be great, he must give himself up for someone or something that is greater than oneself. That is why Jesus says, if anyone wishes to be first, he shall be the last of all and be a servant. And then he brings a child before them and he says, welcome this child like you in my name. And if you receive this child in my name, you receive me. Why? Why does he use a child? It's because in that society at that time, children were considered burdens because they held no social status and had to be provided for. Greatness, then, was Jesus saying, welcome those the world considers the most insignificant people, people who have no means at all to pay you back or provide you any benefit, and learn to sacrifice for them without the thought of any reward. And in doing this, here is where true greatness lies. Some of you might recognize the name of Nicholas Sparks. He has written such books as The Notebook, The Guardian, or Message in a Bottle. And at this point, you're like, Father, how do you know all these books? They're romantic novels. Well, there's such thing as Google. And this is part of homily prep. But he has sold over 105 million books, right? And in terms of the world, he is great. But in an interview, he said that's not how, according to him, he measures his greatness. So Nicholas Sparks explains that when his second son, Ryan, was about 5 years old, they took him and his older brother to the doctors for an examination. And the doctor at one point looked over at Ryan and tried to communicate with him, but he didn't say anything back. So the doctor asked if he could examine the kid. And his parents said, no, you know, that's just Ryan. He's just a quiet kid. But the doctor insisted, because the parents had failed to notice that it wasn't just that Ryan was quiet, but he never spoke a single intelligible word, even at the age of 5 or 6. So after a series of examinations over the course of the year, Ryan was diagnosed with central auditory processing disorder, which Sparks described as being a dyslexia of sound. So dyslexia is when you jumble the letters and words and you can't make sense of it. But this one is where you hear the words, but you jumble the sounds so that you can't recognize what's being said. And that's why he couldn't speak properly. So after a year of research, when his wife was away for 2 weeks, Nicholas Sparks decided to help his son. And so he sat him down, strapped him in a chair, held a picture of an apple in one hand and said, son, say apple, while showing him the picture. And he repeated it several times. And after 2 minutes, the son was bored. After 5 minutes, he started crying. 10 minutes later, he was downright mad. But the father was persistent and gentle. And after 2 hours, he got his son to say, ah. After 4 hours, app. And after 6 hours, after gentle patience and being kind with him, his son, who had never spoken a word, said, apple. The next day, he spent another 6 hours with his son and kindly and gently worked with him. And one night, as he was speaking to his wife over the phone because she was gone for 2 weeks, he told her that Ryan had something to say to her. So as his wife pressed her ear close to the phone, she heard her son Ryan say for the first time, I love you. Nicholas Sparks said out of all the copies of books that he had, you know, sold, or the millions of dollars that he made, or all the movies that were made from his books, he wouldn't have traded any of that for that one moment where he heard his son say, I love you, and how he taught him to speak. That, he said, was the single greatest accomplishment of his life. Whoever receives one child such as this in my name receives me, says Jesus. And so you want to know the essence of greatness? Do the Father's will. Embrace the cross. Receive the most insignificant, the smallest. Welcome children into your family and not get caught up in the contraceptive, abortive, throwaway mentality of this world. And see the moments of greatness hidden in the smallest acts of service in the home, such as when husbands come back home and sees their wife tired and makes dinner, cleans and takes care of them. That's greatness. Or when one of the siblings chooses to tutor and help her younger siblings in their homework. That's greatness. The musician who lends his or her talents, not for their own honor and glory, but gives them to the church so that we may all praise God. Because the more that we try to covet and possess, the more these things will slip through our fingers. And at the time of our death, it won't be our money. You know, there's never a U-Haul following the funeral, you know, procession. It's not going to be the awards, the money that go with us, but the beauty of our love in service of God and of others. So today, discover where true greatness lies, not in positions of power, money, or fame, but find true and lasting greatness by uniting ourselves to Jesus on the cross, and in doing so, giving our lives for something, or rather someone, who is greater than ourselves.